Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your motherfucking ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 202 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of May 18th, 2018. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me tonight is Fatal Vegetable Allergy Dan Ryan.
Fucking allergies.
Seriously.
Everywhere.
That wasn't even on purpose. We were literally just talking about allergies. That wasn't even on purpose.
Because we're old men.
We really are.
My allergies. My eyes are so watery. Oh.
We are what we thought we were revisiting an old topic this week because, but we can't find it in the old episodes. So, as far as we know, it's a new topic. So, if we're wrong about it being a new topic, please write us in and let us know at mail@geekade.com. Just include the words Stone Age Gamer in the subject line, and you can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, whether or not we've done this episode already, or just say hello because we always want to hear from you. A listener,
please check up on us.
Seriously, I went back and tried. I looked through it and I couldn't. I stopped around like episode 110. I didn't see this. Of course, our show notes are, let's say, incomplete for some of our older episodes.
And we're not naming Dean, but but we might, if we were going to put a name on it, Dean's not a bad one.
Dean's not a For anyone who doesn't remember, at the end of our shows, we used to have Dean talk about the ways to get in contact with us. And at a certain point, it just devolved into him yelling show notes.
And that became our show notes. Dean yelling show notes.
Those are good times. Those were the best days of our lives.
Were they?
No.
No. No, they were not.
Dan, I've been playing a lot of cool stuff. What have you been playing?
I have just been continuing to go through through God of War. It is still just that good. I am currently I finished the game. We talked about that last week, and now I'm going back and doing my my level best to platinum it. Which is not something I really do a lot in games. I usually don't have the time to do it, but I'm going back to do it in this one, and I am currently fighting all of the Valkyries. I think I mentioned that briefly last week. It's a thing that you can do. I will say that as you progress through the game, you and Kratos gets significantly more badass along the way. The Valkyries get a lot easier until the last one, because she's real hard. Every time I go to fight her, I start a new recording on the PS4 because I'm like, oh, I'm gonna upload this, like maybe I'll put it on the Geekade YouTube channel and blah blah blah, and like for 3 days now I don't have anything to upload, Chris, because she's hard. Really proper difficult. And like, what's really cool about it is, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but the fights against the Valkyries are not cheap. They're not unfair. They're not like, we just made this impossibly hard boss. There's a real deep level of skill involved in beating them, and I'm just not there yet. And I'm all right with that. Like, I'm okay with going back and trying to get better and figuring out the patterns and the different counters to the different attacks, and stringing together all the different stuff that Kratos can do is very cool. And then I have to go back and, once I finish off her, I have to go back and find like all 53 of Odin's ravens that are spying on you throughout the game, and just all this different stuff. So between that and Puzzle and Dragons, really haven't had much to do. We didn't even mention this. I hit my 1,000th consecutive day on Puzzle and Dragons, Chris.
Wow.
1,000 consecutive days.
That's a lot of days.
That's a lot of days, and I still really like it. There's the Yu Yu Hakusho collab is going on right now. Were you a fan of the anime?
I can't say that I was, no. Mm. Never got into that one.
Because you didn't watch it, or because you just weren't into it?
I saw commercials for it, and it didn't look like something I was interested in.
I like it.
I'd say I have something against green tracksuits, but I think Rock Lee is awesome. So I don't really know what it was. Just maybe it was the dude's hair. I got nothing. Just didn't look to me like something I needed in my life at that particular time.
I think you would dig it. I really do. But
I probably would. I mean, I dig anime a lot. So,
sure. This one, but I don't and, watch and this a ton one's of it good. Anymore, so. There's some really cool. It goes off in some really bizarre directions. But anyway, there's a collab going on right now in Puzzle and Dragons. And what has been really fun is that they added a new feature to the game called the trading post or the monster exchange. And you can trade in different Godfest exclusives. So when Godfest come around twice a month, you roll for them. And if you get a 6-star Godfest exclusive, if you have 4 of the particular list, you can trade them in for different cards during different events. So far, I have traded in for Yusuke Urameshe, the protagonist from Yu Yu Hakusho, who's one of the strongest cards in the game right now. I traded for him, Dean traded for him, and who the fuck is Glenn traded for him. So the 3 of us now have a compatible leader to be able to go through and like do 3-player dungeons and do different stuff. So that's been pretty cool to be able to do that. And he's really strong and fun to play with. So 1,000 days in and still going strong, Chris. It's ridiculous.
That is the word that I would use.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is ridiculous. Anyway.
That's all I got. I didn't get Owlboy yet. Soon.
Yeah, I didn't get Owlboy yet either. And I can't say that it's going to happen soon.
There's a physical release happening for Switch.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess that doesn't surprise me. People have been like going nuts for physical releases on Switch.
Yeah, I don't understand why, but well, I mean, do memory yeah. card space, but
yeah, you know. Even memory card space, there's a lot of folks that are just like the folks that are really angry about Nintendo's online services, like, oh, but you don't, I want to be able to buy the things, you don't own them, and I'm like, all right, I guess I get that, but I don't know.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's a certain point to that. Like Tiff and I went back and forth about that a little bit when I was going to get God of War. It was, well, do I get this physical or do I get this digital? Because if I get it digital, I can never trade it in. And not that I envision a time when I'm going to be trading God of War in, but that option is completely removed if you go digital. You know what I mean? There's no mm-hmm. aftermarket value for it. So
that and there's is also something the whole thing to consider. All right, a lot of folks have been complaining about the second part of the Mega Man Legacy Collection on right. Switch is digital only. And it's like, oh, it's selling me half a game, and you're only getting the second half digitally, and like, I don't want that. I want them physically, so I have them forever. Because, you know, what if the online service goes down, or if my Switch breaks, then I don't have that game anymore. And I kind of get that, but at the same token, like, all right, well, what if your Switch breaks and you have a physical copy and it's like 30 years down the line, you can't buy a new Switch just like that. Now you still have the game on your cartridge, but you can't do anything with it.
Yeah. So, it's kind of a weird thing.
It is. And like, don't get me wrong. I'm a physical media guy for a lot of things. I buy a lot. I love having physical cartridges and whatnot. It's just, there's something about the level of anger towards everything not being physical that I tend to not understand.
Yeah.
Not everything needs to have a physical release. Like there's so many people out there, especially in the Switch crowd, like of the, in the Nintendo fanboy crowd, which I'm allowed to call it because I am a Nintendo fanboy.
You are.
I am. There's just a lot of no physical, no buy. And it's like, well, you're kind of missing out on some stuff. Like,
yeah.
I would have been thrilled if there was a physical Blaster Master Zero, just because then I could have almost every Blaster Master game physically. But you know what? There wasn't. So I bought it digitally, and that's going to have to be fine for me.
Right. Like are you not going to play awesome games because there's no physical release? Like, that's just silly.
Yeah, and especially on the Switch, like, the... the convenience of digital games is really worth it to me. I mean, when I think about how often I want to go back to things, like I like to go back to the games that I like, you know, every couple of years or so, and that does get to be a bit problematic. Like right now, I've been itching to replay Portal since I got to almost done with Bridge Constructor Portal. Last handful of stages are just like so goddamn complicated. But I really felt like going back and replaying Portal 1 and 2, but my wireless controller on my 360 is busted, and I don't feel like firing up my 360 to go through those games again. I wish I had them on, and as far as I know, they're not on any of the modern consoles, right?
Like, they are not.
That's wrong.
It is. You know,
that's not okay.
Yeah, it was 360 and PS3 were the last releases, physical and digital.
Well, that's absurd.
It is.
But, you know, like this Mega Man Legacy Collections, like, I'm not getting those physically. I'm getting the digitals, all digital on that. I just want that on my system at all times.
Yeah. I want to be able to play that at all times.
Exactly. You know, it kind of depends on what the game is, you know, like Tropical Freeze, I'm getting physical. I was officially sold on that game, by the way. They still haven't gotten it at level up yet, but they're going to let me know. The way they sold me on it is the thing that I wanted to do on the Wii U game that I just didn't get up the nerve to go back and do is 100% the game. And one of the reasons that was going to be so difficult is because the Kong letters, you know, in each stage, K-O-N-G is floating around in there. You have to get them all in one pass.
That's annoying.
That is annoying, and it adds to the challenge, and I get it, because you the puzzle pieces don't work that way. There's puzzle pieces hidden in all the stages, and those, you get them once, and you're done.
Right.
K-O-N-G letters, you have to get through straightforward. If you play in funky mode, though, you don't have to do that. If you get one of those Kong letters, you get it, and you don't have to get all four of them and finish the level, kind of a thing.
That's much awesome. Nicer.
But my kind of another thing is, like, I didn't really want to play as funky. I love playing as Donkey Kong because I like what they did with Funky Kong and the new abilities that he has. But I like the challenge of playing with Donkey Kong. I just really like that character.
Right.
And you can play as him in funky mode, which I also didn't know. So it's like a slightly easier version, a slightly more manageable version. Like, I thought funky mode was going to be this easy mode thing, but it's actually just kind of a more manageable mode. Which is cool. Like, even as Funky Kong, like, you're not invincible. You can do all these cool tricks and whatnot, but you also don't get to play with the Kong friends.
Right.
And so for going back and 100%ing the game, which is something I really want to do, this will be way more manageable than going back and doing it on a Wii U, not only because it's on the Switch, but because now I don't have to try to get all four freaking Kong letters in one sitting. And that was enough to officially sell me on it. Especially since I'm, like I said, not paying any money for it.
Right.
I've saved up a combination of store credit and my rewards from the store are enough to just get the game flat out for free. So, done.
Which is really nice.
That is really nice. I'm still a little iffy about the whole $60 price tag on it, but I get it. It is $60 worth of game. Especially, did I talk about Kirby last week?
A little bit.
I finished it. That's what happened. As I finished Kirby, yeah. And like Kirby games, the ending was insanity. Like, have you ever beaten a Kirby game before, Dan?
No.
Here's the thing about Kirby games: is they're super cute until you get to the end, and then it's like some sort of deep, dark, fucked up shit going on, and it's like really strange because you're super cute Kirby. Like, all right, so for example, this game, you're like fighting all these like magician things and they're serving some sort of master. And so you get to the end and like all those magician things come back and then like they die and the master reanimates their corpse because he needs to make a sacrifice to raise this demon that's going to destroy everything. And then he sacrifices himself so that the demon can come back. And then Kirby and his cute friends jump on a star and it turns into a weird shooter game. And you have to fight this giant mutant death monster that looks like a nightmare. Kirby's weird, man.
Yeah, no, all that seems above board.
Yeah, so that game's criminally short. There's only four worlds.
That is,
I thought it was halfway
short.
Done with the game, and then it ended. And I was like, "Are you kidding me?" Like, and people wanted to complain about Donkey Kong being $60. Like, the NES game, Kirby's Adventure, is longer, like, by a lot. It has way more content than this Kirby Star Allies, which, don't get me wrong, I got $60 worth of entertainment out of that game. It was a good time. It wasn't amazing, but it was nice. It was happy. I'm still glad I bought it, but I'm pretty disappointed with the length of that game. Like, that was not a lot of game. That was not a lot of bang for my buck, especially considering that, you know, how much content is in Tropical Freeze. And I feel like Kirby just didn't get nearly as much crap as Tropical Freeze does for being $60. And, like, you want to talk about bang for your buck? Like, that's a game with enough content to justify the price tag. And yeah, Kirby was pretty short.
That's weird.
It is weird because, like, the two previous 3DS games I looked into, Planet Robobot and Triple Deluxe, which are the ones that a lot of the Kirby fans that I listen to on other podcasts and whatnot, they have mentioned, like, this game was kind of a disappointment. Like, it's good, but compared to those previous two games, which were great, it's kind of a letdown. And now I understand why, because both of those games are way more full of content than this game is. And those released on 3DS for $40 a pop.
Well, so. And what's weird about that is that Nintendo has been pretty good about that lately.
Yeah, I would say so.
You know, even going back to the Wii U, like, Captain Toad was like a $40 title.
Yeah.
You know, like, they weren't really... I mean, I know I've bitched about Mario Run and things like that, but, you know, they have been... not even budget titles. That's not even the right way to put it, but they've been more mindful of their pricing
and, yeah, like priced it. Putting a price on, you know, this much content is going to get you... you know, going to cost you this many dollars, yeah, worth, kind of a thing. And they've been pretty smart about that.
It's at least seemed fair.
Yeah. And the Kirby one, I think, was a little unfair. This should have been a $50 game. Even then, it would have been a little spicy, but, like, just having that bit of a discount off of a big, you know, full release, I don't think this game should have been $60. So,
well, that's a shame.
It is, but, you know, now I've moved on to two other things for this week, because next week is the insanity of both. On the 22nd, I get both Mega Man Collections and Runner 3. So, yikes.
So you're just gonna take off work and do that, right?
I don't see what choice I have.
I don't think you have one.
I haven't really jumped back into Bayonetta because I haven't had much of a chance, and I was really kind of dedicating all the time I had to playing Kirby because I felt like I was getting to either a point where I thought I was going to be done with the game and disappointed, or I was going to realize I'm only halfway through and be, like, super excited. Mm-hmm. So I kind of dedicated myself to pushing through that. And but after I finished it, I didn't, instead of jumping into Bayonetta because I was too lazy to change the cartridge out, I jumped into Blossom Tales. And Blossom Tales now has my full attention.
That's the downloadable one you were talking about?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, okay. I think it was like $15 or something, yeah, or less. I could be, I think it was less than that. It's, you know what, the reason I've tried to jump into this game a couple of times before, and the reason I haven't is this reminded me so much of my experience with Axiom Verge.
Okay.
Where I went in with a certain set of expectations because of what everyone had told me. And once I learned to judge the game for what it is instead of what it isn't, I realized that it is outstanding. You know, everyone was like, oh, Axiom Verge, it's Metroid. It's just Metroid. It's a new Metroid game. It's not. It's Axiom Verge. It's
right.
It shares similarities to it, and it's inspired by it, but there's a reason Nintendo didn't let them put Samus in the game, because it wouldn't feel right, because Axiom Verge is freaking different from Metroid.
And it is.
And judging it like that is, I think, unfair to how brilliant that game is, because Axiom Verge is flat-out brilliant, and in the ways that it's different from Metroid. It's amazing. And that's how I feel about Blossom Tales, because everyone has told me it's just A Link to the Past. It's amazing. It's A Link to the Past. I'm like, all right, cool. And then I start playing it, and it's not A Link to the Past. It doesn't feel like A Link to the Past. It's just the way Axiom Verge doesn't feel like Metroid.
Okay.
It looks like it. It pulls a lot from it, and clearly very inspired by it, but it is not A Link to the Past. And I finally kind of pushed through that when I was playing it this morning, and I made it to the first dungeon, And it's really quite brilliant. It does this great thing where the narrative of the game is told very similar to The Princess Bride.
Okay.
It's these two kids and their grandfather's telling them the story. Except the grandfather doesn't have a book to read it from, so he's just kind of pulling it from memory. So it kind of seems like he's making some of it up as he goes along.
Which is kind fun. Of awesome.
It is. I got to a section once the king gets cursed or whatever, and you have to go off to find different things. And I got to the first area where you have to find different things, and the grandfather just kind of blanked on the story. And so the kids started guessing what kind of monsters were there. Like, oh, and there were monsters attacking this forest. And the kids were like, oh, I think there were these giant stone monsters. And the other kid is just like, no, they were archers. They were like super crazy archers. And then the prompt shows up and you decide which monsters are attacking.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, I picked the rock monsters because I thought that sounded cooler. And they are pretty cool.
And the archers sound way harder to fight.
They really do. I don't want projectiles flying at me.
Yeah, no.
But it's got a lot of quality of life differences that A Link to the Past doesn't. Like, you can swing your sword and keep moving at the same time.
Which is nice.
It is very nice. It's also a little bit more, at least the way I've noticed it right now, is a little more projectile driven.
Okay.
Like, I have bombs as my item, and they work kind of like they do in Zelda, Breath of the Wild, where it's not like you have this number of bombs. You can use these items, and it takes away from this bar that consistently recharges. So to fight the stone monsters, I have to chuck bombs at them, and I can just keep chucking bombs, and it recharges pretty quickly, the bomb combat seems to be a big part of it, because, you know, then I started getting attacked by these other wizard things, all these, like, flame things circled around them, and, you know, I'm not getting close to that with my sword, so I just start chucking bombs at them, and that called it a day. I'm not super far into it. I did just get to the first dungeon, but I had a really hard time putting it down this morning because I really like this game now.
Nice.
And it's just really, if you go into Blossom Tales expecting A Link to the Past, more expect an homage to A Link to the Past, not straight up, this is A Link to the Past with a different skin.
Right.
Because it's more than that. And it's very clever. It's very charming. And every time you restart the game, like you save and quit and start up again, the grandfather tells you, like, okay, so where were we? And he gives you a recap of what you were doing, so
that's
you're not
nice.
Lost when you start playing the game. That's really nice. I like that a lot. So a couple other things that I want to touch on. I've been playing the Pinball Arcade, came back up on Switch.
Did it?
Yes, it does not have the tables that were removed, though. The contract that they have with, I think it's Bally and Williams tables, is ending for all platforms except Switch, I think, in like mid to late June.
Okay.
So if you want any of those tables on Pinball Arcade, go get them now, because they're going bye-bye. I think the reason they had to pull it, the rights issue, was that they weren't allowed to sell a new version of this game so close to the end of their contract.
Right.
Which makes the most sense to me. That's a total guess. I could be wrong. I'm still super glad I bought the tables I did when I did, though, because I get to play Taxi and Twilight Zone and Theater of Magic, and that makes me super happy. I did buy one of the new tables that they added to it, though, which is a cool new Doctor Who table.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's neat. It's like a Peter Capaldi themed table, and it goes through the previous doctors before him, not all the way back to classic Who, but all the, you know, modern Who doctors, lots of voice samples. And it's not a real
2005
table.
Reboot.
Exactly. Yeah. Christopher Eccleston. And it's not a real table. I've found out it's just a digital thing they created, but it looks like it would make a really cool real table. I'm kind of sad it's not. So Pinball Arcade's back up on Switch. Take a look at it. It's a free download, and then, like, there are packs that they sell. The packs are much more manageable now. Like, all the packs were $35 for a bunch of tables, and now they've broken them down into smaller segments. Like, you can just get some single tables for $5 or a small pack for $10. I feel like that's a much smarter way of going about it. But
it really is.
The table selection is paltry compared to what it used to be. Like, losing those tables. Like, they lost a ton of tables. I wrote a whole article on it on the Stone Age Gamer blog last week. It's very sad.
Well, so, and, you know, there's nothing that says that those won't come back at some point.
I'd like to think that maybe somebody else is going to, like maybe Zen Pinball or some other company is going to get the rights to make those tables and then release them. Because, you know, Pinball Arcade is great, but I've always kind of felt like Farsight is in a little over their heads. Like, there's a lot of technical issues that take a very long time to get sorted out. You just look at any of their social media and you'll just see, even by social media standards, way more complaints than you would expect to see.
Like, really?
Yeah, lots of people really cheesed about, like, just versions just won't even boot up anymore, and them promising fixes and they just don't come.
Well, and that's just unacceptable. When you,
it really is.
When you work in a medium that is, you know, downloadable add-on packs and stuff just doesn't work, like, no.
Like, I wish you could adjust the gravity in some of these games. Like, I feel like the gravity in Twilight Zone is too harsh. Which is my favorite table of all time. I freaking love Twilight Zone Pinball, but the gravity is so harsh in it. It's like, you can, if you're not really, really, really on guard, you'll lose a ball like just within seconds, just because it just shoots right down the middle faster than you really have time to react for. And I know the real table has some pretty harsh gravity, but, you know, obviously it's a real table. You can adjust it, you know, different arcades can adjust that in different ways.
Right.
But if you even go over and play something like the stupid gopher one, what the hell is that one called? It's like this other table has got these wisecracking gophers. It's like a play on a Caddyshack or something like that. It's a golfing gopher one. And it's not a terrible table. It's just got some, you know, gophers with obnoxious Brooklyn accents talking in it. It's weird. But, like, I can play that game for a long time. Like, I have some really cool, fun games on there because the ball doesn't move so fast.
Right.
And that's just its default. And I wish there was a way to kind of adjust that from table to table, because the Twilight Zone one is just, I haven't been able to do what I can do in a real arcade with, which isn't, like, I'm not a master at it by any stretch of the imagination, but sure, my scores in this home version are way worse than my, you know, what I can do in the arcade. And that's kind of obnoxious, but I have it and I can play it, and that makes me super happy.
Well, all right.
Two other things of interest. Last night, while I was recording this week's episode, most of the time when I'm recording TWEP, I'm kind of working at the same time and half paying attention, but we got to talk about Cobra Kai on this week's episode.
Have not seen it yet.
Oh, dude. It's good. It's really good. I won't
like,
go into
it. It's
completely.
Really good, as in it's good, or Mystery Science Theater?
No, no, good. It's straight up good.
Okay, good.
Yeah, like, it is legitimately really interesting, and I'm really jazzed about it. So I just watched episode 3 today over my lunch break when I was like eating my sandwich, because it's only a half hour, so I can, you know, kind of actually pay attention. But I didn't want to stop because it's that good. Like, I just wanted to keep going and find out what happened next. But anyway, I was playing with my Raspberry Pi, and while the episode was going on, just to have something to do with my hands instead of just sitting here staring at a screen. And I wound up just picking a couple of random things that I hadn't played before. And one of them was Dragon Ball Advanced Adventure for GBA.
Mm.
It was awesome.
Is it?
It's awesome. I've never played it before. I was like, so the way I have my Pi set up is I have this attract mode that has all these, like, every game has a video that auto plays when you you know, just scroll through the menu, which is nice. Right. And I saw the Dragon Ball one, and I was just kind of like flipping through GBA games, and I came to that one, and I saw the video. I was like, whoa, that looks really cool. It's like, it just has these really great animated sprites, and it's like a side scrolling beat 'em up with just original Dragon Ball. So you're like Kid Goku with your power pole, and you're just beating the crap out of like dinosaurs and whatnot. It was really fun.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward, but I mean, I know you have like all manner of emulated stuff going on. Like,
I do not.
Yeah. give that one a shot. Dragon Ball Advanced Adventure. Like, it's pretty cool. I was very impressed with it. But the thing that was really cool that I did was I finally got around to playing a game called Bound High. Do you know what this one is?
I do not.
This is this was an unreleased Virtual Boy game.
Okay.
This was in 96, I think, E3? Nintendo showed off like a whole bunch of like, not a whole bunch, but just like six or seven. These are the games that are coming out this year for Virtual Boy. And then a few months later, it was like, never mind, we're canceling all of them.
We were totally kidding. Our bad.
A few years back, Bound High was one of those games. And a few years back, a playable version of it showed up online and somebody made a handful of cartridges or whatever. And I happen to have the ROM for it on my Raspberry Pi, and it's something I keep meaning to try and I just never got around to. So I finally fired it up last night while we were doing the show, and I can't speak to what it sounds like because I was playing with the sound off because I didn't want it coming in the background of TWEP.
Sure.
But it's really fun. It's a pretty simplistic kind of, it's not really a puzzle platformer kind of thing, but all right, so you're this ball and you're looking down at the ground and you're just like a bouncing ball, but you can control where you're going, and you have to land on different enemies to squish them without touching the ground too many times, because every time you touch the ground, the tile disappears underneath you and you can't touch that part of the ground again, or you fall to the floor. And you just kind of have to bounce from enemy to enemy, and it was really fun. I wish I could play it on an actual Virtual Boy.
That sounds really cool, actually.
Yeah, no, it's just like the best of the Virtual Boy games, with the exception of Wario Land. Like, it's pretty simple arcade-style fun.
Right.
And it works without the 3D effect, but it looks like the kind of game that would have really done a good job of showing off the 3D effect, because it's like the ball doesn't ever change its distance from the camera, so when you're bouncing, like, the earth underneath you is moving up and down, almost like a Mode 7 Pilot Wing sort of effect from Super Nintendo, but like better slash worse looking. Better because it's not flat Mode 7 stretching pixels, worse because it's red. But it's a really neat game.
Very red.
I looked up like how much cartridges for the Virtual Boy cost, and they're like in the a couple $100s, because you know people just homebrewed them. But apparently it's creating new Virtual Boy cartridges is not something that's easy to do or even possible, because they're all like so proprietary. Like, the plastic shells are one thing, but the actual boards themselves, you have to use donor carts, and
really
there's just not a lot out there. So that's why you don't see a lot of like actual new homebrew Virtual Boy releases, or like a Virtual Boy Everdrive or something like that. So anyway, Bound High, super cool game. If you like Virtual Boy, give it a try.
All Yay. Right then.
All right. Well, the only other thing I need to touch on is we had a kind of a listener comment on Twitter. Rob Metzger reached out on Twitter and writes, Chris, since you own everything in the world except a PS4, true, how do you like this system? And he took a picture of his 3DO. And I started to try to answer him on Twitter, and it just wasn't happening because I didn't have the characters. So I told him I'd answer him on the show. I'm going to extend it to you also, Dan. What do you think of the 3DO?
I have next to no experience with it.
Really?
Yeah, I really don't. There were a few fighting games that I played on it that were terrible. God, what was the one that was like the big, when the 3DO came out, there was like one fighting game. It was like hyper violent, but hyper realistic. Am I making that up completely?
No, I don't think you... Was it Way of the Warrior?
Yes.
Is that it?
Yes.
Way of the Warrior. Yeah, the Mortal Kombat clone. Yeah.
Awful. Ooh. Awful game.
Is this the one with the stupid dude with the kilt that would like shoot a fireball out from under his kilt?
Yeah, like so bad.
Wow, this game was terrible.
So bad. That's
this
the
was
bulk
a Naughty Dog game. Are you kidding me?
Really? It's awful.
Yeah, that's terrible.
That is the bulk of my experience with the 3DO.
Wow. Do I even have that game? I don't even know. All right. Well, my experience with the 3DO is I thought it was a joke when it came out because, I don't know, it was like three times as expensive as a PlayStation or even a Saturn. And that just sounded like a terrible idea to me. So,
yeah, I mean, not the smartest strategy.
Yeah, and it doesn't like the games themselves didn't. It was like, you want to get a 3DO, you got to get Gex. That's the game to get for your 3DO. And it's like, well, Gex isn't all that cool.
I don't know that I need to get it then.
Yeah, I think I might go ahead and avoid that. A friend of mine, my friend Joe Polisano, had a 3DO, and he kind of swore by it for a little bit. He's like, it's really cool. It's you can watch CD movies on it or some crap like that. I don't know. I just thought that the system was absurd, but I was always kind of fascinated by it because I liked the idea that they were trying to create an open form platform, you right. know, like there was, you know, a Gold Star 3DO and yeah. the Panasonic 3DO. And, I have two 3DOs myself. I have the Panasonic one with, I don't know what the model numbers are or anything like that. I know there's like an FZ one or something like that. I don't know which ones they are. The one that, that Rob has in the picture is, as far as I know, the one I don't have, because I think there's only three, but I could be wrong. I have the Gold Star 3DO and I have the Panasonic one with the round corners on them. It's like a big square and, you know, zoomy disk drive that opens and closes.
That's the one I'm more familiar with.
That seems, I feel like that's like the standard unit, but and I've had a lot of fun with mine. I don't tend to go back to it because I feel like every game that I liked on it, there are now better versions of elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Like the 3DO had Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo and an excellent version of it, like arcade perfect, but now that game is available kind of on in other ways on easier to play platforms. It had a great version of Samurai Showdown. Again, now right. the official arcade version is elsewhere. You know, Braindead 13, I played on it, you know, a bit, but I wound up playing that more on PC. Doom was a pretty decent version, but, you know, we've gotten Doom elsewhere. I've never cared for Gex, never really did it for me.
No, it's a horrible game.
Yeah, I can't say it's horrible, but it didn't really jump out and grab me. And that's kind of it. I have, according to my records, I have 30 games for it. I'll actually go with 29 because I have two copies of Killing Time, one official and one that's just a copy. Actually, a lot of the games I have for it are bootleg copies, just burned to CD because my 3DO, a lot of the 3DOs could just read burnt discs, and mine is one of them that does.
Yeah, that's not going to go well if you're trying to have a successful system. Like, I don't even have to go do anything. I just put this in.
Just put this Sweet. In and you're good to go. Awesome. I do have a sealed copy of Rise of the Robots. Speaking of crappy fighting games for 3DO, sealed Rise of the Robots. I bet that's worth a pretty penny.
It's worth something, maybe.
So that's how I feel about the 3DO. I think it's a really interesting system. I liked the concept of it being a system that, like, this is a platform that anyone can make a version of to try to, like, kind of standardize video games like DVDs. I don't think it has the most incredible game library in the history of mankind, and it is kind of like completely outdated. Like, I don't know what exclusives on 3DO make the system worth it, other than it being a curiosity that I just think is cool. So
I think that's about it.
Yeah, it is a curiosity at this point. If there are awesome 3DO exclusives that we are overlooking, please let us know, because we want to know from you.
I actually don't.
You do, and you know it.
I'm not going to lie, because I'm not going to play them.
That's fair. I will. I'll just burn them OC. Throw on my old 3DO one of these days. Whichever one I feel like grabbing at the time. I love having multiple 3DOs. What a life.
What a charmed life you lead, Chris.
Seriously. All right. Well, the question is, do we jump into this, or do we take a break and then come back?
I say we take a break and come back, Chris.
Yeah, we've been at this for a while now. So yeah. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to get to our feature topic, which is, since this is our seminal, our landmark 202nd episode, we're going to talk about our favorite twos, our favorite sequels, and maybe even some of our least favorite sequels, because I had a handful of those to write. You are listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around. And now here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, Return of the Living Dead 3 may not be the title you think of when you think of all-time horror classics. Typically, the deeper you go into sequel territory, the worse things get, especially when they're sequels to spin-offs. However, in the case of the Return of the Living Dead series, the third time was, in fact, the charm. at least according to Geek Age's Ernie Rockelman. Find out why this horror threequel is worth revisiting 25 years later and celebrating 25 years of Return of the Living Dead 3, located in the think tank. Is this the one with Julie? Who's Julie? Return of the Living Dead 3?
It's the one where there was...
yeah, it's Julie. Tiff made me watch it. She loves this one.
I've never seen it, and editing the article kind of made me... If I liked horror movies, I'd probably give it a shot, because it sounded vaguely interesting. Because, like, wasn't the first two supposed to be, like, super comedies, and then, like, horror comedies, and then this one kind of took a...
I don't know enough about it.
I don't either, but Ernie sure does. This is a very good article. I say give it a shot.
All right.
Next, in the grim darkness of the far future, there is only Victorian clothing, also adorable go-karts, and radioactive CEO skeletons, and murderous Sulu, and a street gang that's clearly seen Akira, and at least a couple of Bruce Wayne's bastard children, and women with fluorescent pixie haircuts, and scanners dying ironically, and easy-to-draw time machines. And you know what? There are a lot of things. What in the world am I talking about? I'm talking about, I'm reading Jordan's writing, because Jordan's a clever dude. Listen to Nonstop Comic Shop, episode 22, It's Gonna Be the Future Soon, to find out. And since he gave me this description, which I kind of copy-pasted into our commercial, because I wasn't going to come up with something better than all of that,
no.
I've had It's Gonna Be the Future Soon stuck in my head, because it's a damn good song. Jonathan Colton rules.
Finally, Chris, spring is in the air, and with it, a literal metric fuckton of pollen.
We can't stop complaining about allergies.
I know, because we're so... But when we're not all sneezing and gasping for air, dabbing our eyes with tissues, because they're spritzing, Chris, they're fucking spritzing all day. Kids, you know, not us, are playing
small
sports.
Humans.
Small humans. And one of those sports that kids play, Chris, is America's pastime, the bases ball.
The bases ball. You know, Billy, that's the national sport.
We go outside and play the bases ball race. Race banded. Geek Age Dave DiOrio, a lifetime baseball fan, delves into what it's like for him watching his son's Little League team, as well as the other types of parents that show up, the anxiety that comes with trying the sport for the first time, and a whole lot more. Don't miss In the Defense of That Guy, located in the think tank.
That commercial I wrote doesn't do the article justice. Totally check it out. It's an interesting read. Dave's a good writer.
Dave is the best of us.
He is. Also, go watch State and Maine. That movie's amazing.
Also, watch Harvey Birdman. Attorney General.
Attorney General? Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. He's going to try to impeach Phil Seven because he's the president.
Glad. Yeah, I'm so glad Colbert's coming back for that, too.
Yeah.
I felt his absence in the final season of that show.
Yeah, it just wasn't as good.
You can catch all this great stuff plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at geekade.com. Wait. And we're back. I just mentioned Ready Player One. Dan, go.
I hate E.T. now.
Spielberg has retroactively destroyed all of his own works?
Anything Steven Spielberg has ever done. Steven Spielberg is the biggest hack. He is the worst director, except for Catch Me If You Can. That shit's fucking dope. Ready Player One is a fucking atrocity. It is disgusting. I hated it. I adore that book. It is not the most well-written Burke. Jesus Christ, I'm tired. It is not the most well-written book from a prose standpoint, right? Like, it's not Shakespeare. The story that is there, though, is so good.
I thought it was really cool. I loved the book.
It's so cool. And you fucking hate reading.
Yeah, it was one of those few books that just kind of like, it just kept me going.
I have read a lot of books. I have read that book multiple times. I have listened to it multiple times. The audiobook that Will Wheaton reads is great. It's a wonderful story. And what's so great about the story is that you really go on that journey with the characters, right? Like, you really go on the journey with Wade, and you get the falling in love with Artemis, with the idea of what Artemis is, and then being presented with the real thing and all of that, and finding out finding out H is a girl in the real world when he assumes he's just this badass dude that he's best friends with, but, you know, he never met him in the real world, IRL. So fucking all of that stuff is earned, and it's genuine in the book. And in the movie, like, again, spoilers if you haven't seen the movie, it does follow the arc of the book, but he meets Artemis at a race, which was added to the film, that's not in the book. The first key is located at the end of a race, and he meets Artemis in the first one, and he is in love with her. And 20 minutes later, she is in love with him. Inexplicably. No development. They're just, hey, we're here, we're in love. I'm going to tell you my real name. And she's like, don't fucking tell me your real name. And then 5 minutes later, they're in the real world. She fucking tells him his real name. And they meet up in real life. And like, it just, nothing is earned. Nothing in the movie is earned. It just goes from like, it's just set piece to set piece. It's awful. It's awful.
That's a huge disappointment, but I can't say I'm terribly surprised.
There was no way to do that book justice in one movie. There just wasn't. There's too much. Two movies would have been fine. Like, the first movie should have been them going through all of the backstory and ending with finding the first key. And if you didn't want to have the first key on Ludus, fine. If you didn't want to have it be the joust competition and having to fight the fucking the wraith and all that shit at the end, like, fine. Don't do that. Do the race, but end the first movie there. And then the second movie is the rebellion against the Sixers and IOI and all of that stuff. They find the first key 15 minutes into the flick.
Jesus, really?
Yeah. Like, the movie starts with a good solid 5 minutes of narration of just Wade Watts just fucking trying to cram in the backstory. And, like, what was so cool about the way the book was done was because Wade finds the first key on Ludus because that's the only planet he can go to, and it's kind of this wonderful little happenstance that he's so broken, he can't afford to travel and can't afford to do all these other things, but that, the key was planted there because that's where they all go to school, and there's the virtual schools and all of that stuff. None of that is covered in the movie. Like, they don't talk about him going to school on Ludus. There is a scene where the CEO of IOI is like, you know, fuck, dude, like, I want to make all the schools on Ludus like a John Hughes movie. But that's it. Like, they don't mention it again. And it just glosses over everything. And it's horrendously bad.
That's terribly disappointing.
It really is. And like, all of that would have been fine if the movie itself were good. Like, you want to completely change it? Cool. Whatever. It's a movie, not a book. I get that. You want to change the things that are in here? Like, oh, go right ahead. You still have to make a good movie.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think Sorry, I just came across a very silly picture. I think back to like the changes he made from the book to the movie in Jurassic Park, and you know, end of the day, Jurassic Park is a damn fine entertaining movie. Mm-hmm. And you know, I liked the book of Jurassic Park too, and I've only read it once because, like I said before, I'm not much of a reader. But that movie I've watched a billion times. I'll still watch it to this day. I think it's outstanding.
I hate that movie now. It's so a horrible movie. That. It's a terrible. The dinosaur from the T-Rex from Jurassic Park is in Ready Player One in the middle of this race. That but King you know what? Kong is CG. In there for some reason. Like, it just, man. Like, and the Battletoads are in there, and that's fucking stupid.
Like, I'm gonna see it someday.
No, you have to see it.
I really do. I have to see it for several reasons. I'm really glad I read the book. I really liked the book, and I like Steven Spielberg movies. So I'm sad to hear that this went so sideways. But I could kind of tell. I listened to the episode of Movie Sign with the Mads.
Okay.
It's a great podcast. If anybody listening doesn't know what it is Trace Beaulieu and Frank Conniff and Carolina Hidalgo. Trace and Frank were the mad scientists on Mystery Science Theater.
Right.
And so they have a podcast where they watch movies. And I listened to the episode about this, and Frank hated it. And at least I think he did. I feel like their biggest gripe, Carolina liked it, and the Mads kind of biggest gripes about it was like they felt like they just were not in on the joke. Like they weren't in on any of this stuff. They didn't get any of the references. But crap, I lost where I was going with that. Darn it. I had a thought and then it left my head. But they did not care for the movie overall. And I guess I can't. It didn't surprise me too much that they kind of hated it, but I don't know.
It was so obvious watching this movie that like Spielberg was just out of touch.
That was it. That was exactly the point. And I think it was from the podcast that it felt like you know, your grandpa or like your dad talking the hip lingo, you know.
It
like,
really did. That is 100% what it feels. I think what I put up on Facebook was that it's like trying to teach an old person today how to program their VCR. It's just fucking useless. Yeah. And pointless. Like,
and it, like I just
it
I
really
think...
felt like your dad coming in and being like, what's up homies, like all the cool
what's
kids
up,
are
Steve Buscemi. What's up, fellow young?
What's up,
young
fellow people? Young people? Like, are we all gonna go dab on them? Like, it was so out of touch. It was like, fuck, you are an old man that made a shitty movie,
and that's kind of the real tragedy of it. Is that you know, Spielberg is clearly still capable of making good movies.
Absolutely.
And I understand the thought process behind, you know, who needs to direct this movie is Steven Spielberg, because so much of it was is an homage to his works. But I don't think he was the right person to direct this movie. They needed somebody young.
No, they needed Edgar Wright. That is the only person.
That would have been so good.
He is the only person that, I mean, I'm sure there are others, but
Dude, after watching Avengers, the Russo brothers could have directed.
Well, yeah, they really could have. But like,
they can direct anything, as far as I'm concerned.
Go watch Scott Pilgrim.
Yes,
and yeah. Think and you're that so right. Dude making
crap,
Ready Player One.
Absolutely right.
That was the thing that you swing and a miss. It's awful. It's awful. It makes me sad. I hated it. Like Tiff and I looked at each other. You know, we're watching the movie, and like about an hour into this 2-hour and 40-minute movie, or however fucking long it is, I looked over at her and I was like, all right, so this is terrible, right? Like, it's not just me being disappointed that it's not the book. Like, this is just objectively bad. And it is. I don't know that I've been more disappointed in a movie since like the Masters of the Universe movie. Ooh. And I would rather watch that than watch Ready Player One again. And
wow.
That movie is horrible.
Well, I guess that's as good a segue as any.
You know what's not horrible, Chris?
These sequels. So we were, clearly we didn't actually need to. Clearly no. Dan and I could just bullshit for an hour. We don't even need a feature topic.
We really don't.
But just because we put a little thought into it, let's go ahead and do it anyway.
It has been an hour, Jesus.
It has, yeah. We've just been talking.
Man.
We are from New Jersey, Dan.
Coffee talk. I will give you a topic.
So we want to talk about not so terrible twos. So basically, like, a lot of times sequels come out and they're not as good as the originals, and a lot of times sequels come out and they are, and or sometimes they're even better. So we want to talk about some of our favorite sequels, and if we have time, a handful of my least favorite sequels. So it seemed like as good a time as any, since it's our 202nd episode, and I like the number two. So I'll start and say I think Super Mario Brothers 2 is amazing.
I do not disagree. It is the only Mario Brothers game I like. And it has nothing to do with it being Doki Doki Panic. I have subsequently, gone back and played Doki Doki Panic, and I don't care for it the way that I care for Super Mario Brothers 2.
Yeah, Super Mario 2 is Doki Doki Panic perfected.
It really is.
Because Doki Doki Panic, it's the biggest problem, I think, with that one is not only is, like, the music's a little better in the in Mario 2. Like, there's more of it. Like, it kind of resolves, the songs resolve more. But in Doki Doki Panic, you have to beat every stage of the game with all four characters.
Which is weird. It's a weird choice.
It's kind of dumb. Like, it really pads the game in a not fun way. Because, like, after you've played the same level three times, it's like, all right. Come on.
Yeah.
Do I really have to play this the fourth time with slightly different controls? This is dumb. Super Mario 2 is, and I really feel like it works as a sequel to Super Mario Brothers. This did not strike me as strange when I played it.
No, me neither. It made as much sense as the original Super Mario Brothers does.
Exactly. And, like, that's the thing. There was just Super Mario Brothers. So there wasn't anything saying that this couldn't be where they go next. You know, it was still Mario running and jumping, and instead of, it was as big a difference as going from Mario Brothers to Super Mario Brothers. You know, like, it just didn't strike me as weird. It didn't feel like it wasn't a Mario game. I believe it's still a Miyamoto joint, as far as I know.
Yeah,
it just had a lot of different mechanics in it, and that was cool. And it built on the world, and I never suspected for a minute that it wasn't actually a Mario game. And I know everyone says that now, like, oh, I played that game when I was a kid. I was like, man, this game is weird. This is so much different.
No, you didn't. It's
like,
no, you didn't.
It was Mario Mania. It was the new Mario game. You had to have it. And, like, that was that.
You had no bearing to even think that it would be weird that was the new Mario game.
Exactly. Like, Zelda 2, I get. Zelda 2, you go from Zelda 1 to Zelda 2 and you think, wow, that's pretty different.
Yeah, that is objectively different.
Or even something like from going Castlevania to Castlevania 2. But, I'll stand by this. This is about the same as going from Castlevania to Castlevania 2. It's like, it still felt like a Mario game to me. Just neat. And I love how they've incorporated all these things since then into the world of Mario. Because Shy Guys are great.
Shy Guys are great. It was a cool world. Like, yeah, it's a damn good game. I dig it.
I wish with all of my might that this game would get a sequel. I really wish that they would make a new Mario game in this style that takes place in Subcon, where you're throwing vegetables and stuff. Like, I want to see where a new development team would go with this core mechanic. Because I think there's a lot of potential there.
I would be really
there.
Into it.
I would, too. I would, you know what? I want to see what Lizard Cube would make with it. The folks who did the Wonder Boy remake, I want that art style applied to a brand new Mario game set in Subcon about throwing radishes and stuff. I want Wart back. I want Mauser back. I want Triclide back. Claw Grip and Fry Guy. I want friggin' auto bombs rolling around. I want albatrosses tossing ba-bombs at me. I want super cool weirdness of old school Mario with hand-drawn animation. Super Mario 2 is awesome. Your turn.
Yeah, I'm into that whole idea, Chris. Way into it. So the first one I wanted to talk about was Arkham City, because We had gotten some okay Batman games up, you know, throughout the years, but then Arkham Asylum came out, and it was
that just changed everything.
It really honestly did. Like for people who are listening who might be accustomed to Batman games being of a certain thing, like Arkham Asylum was such a different take on what a superhero video game could be, on what a Batman game specifically could be. It was mind-blowing when that game came out. Mm-hmm. But one of the limitations of Arkham Asylum is the fact that it does take place inside Arkham Asylum. It is very much focused on that particular aspect of the Batman mythos. So when the sequel was announced, because it was like as soon as you got done that first one, it was like, all right, so when's the next one coming out? I can't wait to get back into this. I love everything about this. When the sequel was announced and it was Arkham City, it was like, oh, this is like, so we're doing it. Okay. We're doing it out in the city, and you've taken the concept of Arkham and moved it as a city. Like you're making this huge thing. It expanded the gameplay and made it so that all of the cool Batman stuff that you can do all of a sudden felt so much bigger, and you felt so much more like Batman going out into the city. It was just awesome. The stuff with Catwoman, the stuff with Two-Face was very cool. It took everything that was great about the first one and improved upon it immensely.
I never played it.
You really should.
I never finished Asylum because I got distracted by the Metroid Prime trilogy. And
sure, you know, I get that.
Like, yeah, I'll play these games I've played again instead of keeping playing this awesome new Batman game that I was totally into. It was like I couldn't resist the urge to replay Metroid Prime one more time because I'm just an asshole.
That's
true. I really liked Arkham Asylum too, and Arkham City kind of scared me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I kept getting lost in the asylum, and I was like, oh, cool, let's open this up into a city. I'll never finish this game. I'm going to keep running around the same two blocks over and over again and be like, I remember this trash can. Was this the same trash can? I just get lost forever and never beat it, and then just cry in a corner because I am not Batman.
You are not. That is very, very true.
And what I liked a lot about Arkham Asylum is that how much it made you feel like Batman. Like when you got into those combat situations and you were just fighting people from every direction.
Yeah.
Or when you're like, you know, hiding on those gargoyles on the ceiling or something like that.
Oh, so
just
cool.
Completely sneaking up. That was the first Batman game that made me feel like Batman. And I freaking loved that about that game.
And that being able to do that within the city itself, was just so fucking cool. Because, that, like I said, it opened up so many more areas where you could be Batman.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe someday I will play it.
It's excellent.
And then they annualized it and beat it to death.
The last one I played, I didn't, like, it didn't blow my skirt up, but.
Anyway, I'll tell you what did blow my skirt up. My next game, Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link.
So good.
I freaking love this game, man. And speaking of games that I wish they'd make a sequel to, like Mario 2, I wish they'd make a new Zelda game this flavor.
Yeah, let me back in this world.
Side-scrolling Zelda? Freaking cool, man. Like, it's good. Those battles with Iron Knuckle, like, this game is tough. It's got a lot of really smart and clever puzzles and stuff in it. Like, this game is just neat, man. I love this world. It used to give me nightmares as a kid. Like, this game legit gave me nightmares because it is eerie as hell. It's just great. This game is great. And it's such a radical departure from going from Zelda 1 to Zelda 2 was, like, crazy shock. Like, I loved, you know, Zelda 1, and then playing through Zelda 2, it's like you got that overworld map, and it's like, all right, this looks weird. I can't do anything. And then all of a sudden it's side-scrolling, and it's... At one time, it's like such a shock, but at the other time, like, now I'm in a town and there's people walking everywhere and I can talk to every single one of them and they have names. And, you know, most of the time they just say, sorry, I know nothing. But a lot of times there'll just be something happening in this town and there's always movement. And every town you go to, they're alive. And not only that, this is where most of the names from later Zelda games come from, like Ruto and whatnot, that they were from this game. They were the names of all the towns. And that's super cool. Like, this is a piece of Zelda mythology that I feel is overlooked so often because it's got this weird reputation as being the black sheep of the series. Like, a lot of people back then didn't like it because it was so different, and I feel like it doesn't get the love it deserves. Zelda 2 is a great sequel, and it needs its own sequel because it's awesome.
It very much does. To be fair, though, it was a super weird departure.
It was a super weird departure. Weirder, I think, than Super Mario 2, like I said before. And what I would actually be even more okay with is that if they made a sequel to this that wasn't a Zelda game. Like, if they took this gameplay style of, like, running around on a weird-ass map and then, like, something brings you into a side-scrolling thing, like, if they made a sequel to this that wasn't a Zelda game, or, like, even something that's just set in Hyrule that doesn't star Link or something like that. I don't know. Yeah. But this is, it doesn't play like any other Zelda game. It has a lot of those same conventions, but it's so intrinsically different. I get why the shock was there, but to say that it's not an objectively good game, like, I just think that's wrong. This game's great.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. I love it a lot.
You know what else you love?
What's that?
Mega Man 2.
I do really love Mega Man 2. We don't need to spend too much time on it, though. We have gushed about our love for Mega Man 2, but, I mean, really, when you add a spoke to the wheel, I think is just super impressive. And Mega Man 1 was great, and Mega Man 2 makes it look terrible.
Yeah, by comparison. Mega Man 2, just talk about taking something compliment. And perfecting it. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah, there you go. They took the Mega Man formula and they perfected it. Well, they moved towards perfecting it. We've had this conversation. I think they perfected it in Mega Man 3, but another time. My next pick is another underrated sequel to another NES classic. I think Kid Icarus of Myths and Monsters is about as good a straight sequel to Kid Icarus as anyone could have possibly wanted.
I don't disagree.
This game is great.
I still need to play what they redid on the 3DS because it's just escaped me, but I want more
3D
Kid
classics,
Icarus.
Kid Icarus? Yeah.
Like, I want more Kid Icarus like this.
Yeah, me too. I mean, Kid Icarus Uprising is awesome, and I'd love a sequel to that game too. But I've always wanted that kind of 16-bit sequel to Kid Icarus. This was a really great step up, like, for you know, going from NES to Game Boy. You know, the sprites look really nice. They're bigger. They got rid of the whole, like, the screen scrolls up, and if you fall down, you're dead. Like, you can just fall back down and then scroll back up. The way the screen kind of loops around itself instead of walking off one end of the screen and showing up on another, the whole world just kind of scrolls like a Flintstones cartoon, you know? Like,
yeah, it just kinda, which is kind of awesome.
Loops around. It is kind of awesome, and it makes for some really weird situations that you can kind of get yourself in. It's as goofy. It's slightly less goofy than the original one. Like the monster designs aren't quite as good, but you still got your eggplant wizards. You still have, like, the Grim Reaper. It's got some great music, not as great as the original because Hip Tanaka didn't do the music, but, you know, it controls really well. It's got great tight controls. It added this thing where you can flap Pit's little wings and fall slower, which is nice.
Which is great.
Yeah, it's a really nice addition. And it wasn't Medusa at the end. It was Orcos. It was a different villain, which I think is cool. I like it when game characters have a rogues gallery, you know, like back when Mario fought, you know, he fought Bowser, then he fought Wart, then he fought Tatanga, then he fought Bowser and Bowser and Bowser and Bowser and Bowser till all it did for the end of all eternity.
Yeah.
Except for, like, RPG games.
It's a little boring.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I every time they release a new Donkey Kong Country game, like, hey, where are the Kremlings, though? Why aren't the Kremlings there? I want to fight King K. Rool and the Kremlings. Like, now give them a break. Like, I thought the Tiki Tak tribe was awesome, and the Snowmads are pretty cool, too. Like, we fought the Kremlings already, and I liked this in Kid Icarus, where it was, like, You know, it's Medusa, now it's Orcos. And I loved it in Kid Icarus Uprising, where it was like, oh, we're fighting Medusa again. Just kidding. It's
just
Hades.
Just kidding.
And Hades is such a good villain. Hades is awesome.
It really is.
I heard somebody on, I think it was on Game Explained, say that they think Hades should be the last boss in the new Smash Brothers game. And I totally agree.
That would be very cool.
That iteration of Hades and Kid Icarus Uprising is just so great. Uprising is a wonderful game. Play it, everybody. Speaking of wonderful games, Dan, what's your next one?
So, we've talked about how I went through and went crazy and played through all of the Uncharted series back to back to back to back because, you know, why not? And, man, the leap from the first Uncharted to Uncharted 2 is staggering.
Uncharted 2 is the Mega Man 2 of the Uncharted series.
It really is. Like, the first Uncharted game is fun, but it's not a great game in retrospect. You know, when it came out, it was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is the future of gaming. And then Uncharted 2 came out and just completely rewrote how you do big epic action games.
Yeah, it took what the first game did and perfected it.
The acting got so much better, the animation got so much better, the set pieces got so much better, the just everything about it. They took what was there. They took this shell of an idea of Dude Raider. You know, like, that was kind of the big criticism thrown against Uncharted back in the day, was that, oh, it's just like Tomb Raider, but a dude.
And then, it really isn't.
It really
it
wasn't.
It really isn't. It is so, that's so reductive. It's really not. Uncharted is definitely, it plays nothing like the old Tomb Raider games.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Like, nothing at all.
He happens to pick up some treasure. That
happens to share a similar setting.
Yeah, that is about it. But with Uncharted 2, there was no way to make that argument ever again. Like, it separated itself so far away from anything. And Uncharted 2 really made Uncharted a franchise.
Yeah, that's where you knew that this was something that was sticking around.
Yeah, it is an amazing game. And if
what
you were
a
like
crap
me,
load of game of the years, and you know, it earned every piece of it.
And
game's
well
a
deserved.
Yeah.
And if you were like me and had never played any of the Uncharted games, really go back and play them. Absolutely incredible stuff.
I loved the first one. I adore the second one. And I never finished the third one. I haven't played any of them since. It's on my list of things to do.
As an aside, I think I am getting a cold as we are sitting here, Chris.
I think it's the pollen, Dan.
More and more stuffy as the night goes on.
It's the pollen. It's the allergies. I'm sure of it.
Christ.
All right, I'm getting tired, you're getting tired, so let's blow through these. I want to take you for a ride, Dan.
Mustache ride? No. A jazzy, funky ride into the world of mashed-up fighting games.
Talk about perfecting a formula. Marvel vs. Capcom is great. Marvel vs. Capcom 2 is amazing. 56 playable characters, 55 because two of them are Wolverine. Bone claws and adamantium claws. That's totally right. Different dude.
Nope. Doesn't count.
Yeah, doesn't count. No, Marvel's Capcom 2 is amazing, man. Like, it's they've simplified it, and in the best possible way, going from MVC 1 to MVC 2. Like, there were some folks that kind of complained that the combos were a lot more automatic than they were in the original MVC, and I think that simplification actually just blew the doors open on this game, and it's why it stayed in competitions for so damn long, because it's just that good.
It's still my favorite fighting game. It's my favorite non-weapons-based fighting game, which I know seems like kind of a bullshit thing, but I can't, like, not talk about Soul Calibur.
Yeah, it's true. But this game blew my mind so hard, especially, you know, coming off of all the great, you know, I loved this art style, and coming off all the awesome stuff that was, like, just the awesomeness that was the original Marvel vs. Capcom, and then all of a sudden, like, just blowing the doors off of it and making the combos crazier and more characters, and Cable was in it, and they made up a bunch of shit like Ruby Heart and the friggin' cactus dude, Amigo, like, what
Samba,
the hell?
The Samba de Amigo guy.
Yeah,
I don't know where the hell he's from.
He's not from anything. He's from Marvel vs. Capcom 2. He's a freaking cactus dude. They invented for that game.
They really... What's so staggering about that game is that they somehow made all of these disparate elements work together. Like, we come to expect it now, like Marvel vs. Capcom 3 and Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite or whatever the fuck this new one is. You know, when you mash these things together, Tekken vs. Street Fighter or Tekken v Street or whatever the fuck, Cross Street Fighter or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Before Marvel vs. Capcom, I mean, you had had the Marvel fighting games and you had had Marvel vs. Capcom 1. But the sheer amount of characters from all of these disparate worlds of Captain Commando somehow making sense and being balanced in a fighting game against Ryu.
The Juggernaut.
And the Juggernaut. Somehow all of that worked together. And it is, and Tron Bon works. And the fucking, like, the little serve bots and shit that you could call in was awesome. It was it's just great. Just an absolutely wonderful game.
I agree.
Adore that game.
Me too. All right, here's a strange choice, but I'm sticking by it. Red Steel 2. The first game I had a decent amount of respect for because I could tell what they were trying to do. And they were trying to prove that first-person shooters could work on the Wii. And they almost did that, except for the fact that the game was kind of crap. And, like, there were a lot of, like, real basics to... Like, you just wanted to be able to... Okay, this is a cool idea because it's, like, you can use swords or you can use guns. And that's great. And, like, the swords are better in some situations and guns are better in other situations. That's really cool, except you didn't get to choose what those situations were. It also had this really kind of generic Yakuza setting, and it was, like, just kind of bleh. So Red Steel 2 rolls along a few years later, because the original Red Steel sold a crap load of copies, because it was, you know, it was an interesting game on a brand new system. It had that launch title thing going on, but everyone hated it so much that the brand was toxic at that point. But Ubisoft rolled forward to try to reinvent the brand with Red Steel 2, and it's a damn shame that they did, because this game has nothing, as far as I can tell, has nothing to do with the original Red Steel. It's set in some weird, like, Wild West dystopian future or something like that. It's freaking cool, man. Like, you play as this stranger. You can swap between swords and guns anytime you want. I didn't play through a ton of it. I think I put, like, you know, 4 or 5 hours in it or something, and I enjoyed what I played. I wasn't very good at it, because I'm not good at first-person shooters, even on the Wii. But this was a cool game with a really great redesign. Like, instead of making it all generic and whatnot, they added a lot of color to it. It had kind of a cel-shaded look. It was still violent, you know. I think it was still M-rated, but it was just good. It was a very smart game. It's what the first one should have been to begin with. Like, right. It was a game with its own identity. And a really neat world to play around in. And it's a shame that it's never going to go anywhere because, no. I mean, even the name Red Steel, like, makes more sense connected to this, like, kind of Western vibe that they had going on in that. Like, it's a good name and it's a good game, and it's unfortunately tarnished by a terrible first game in the series.
Yeah, and, that is a shame.
Yeah, because it's toast. No one's ever going to play this game.
No.
You know, no one's ever going to go back and say, you know what? I want to play Red Steel 2. Like, nobody's going back to the Wii library to pick up on those gems that they missed, because the Wii was such a strange system. And this is one of those situations that's just a shame. Like, if you have a Wii and you have, like, a Wii Motion Plus controller and you are interested in trying something weird, give Red Steel 2 a shot. Like, even if you hated the original Red Steel, this has nothing to do with it. It's way more sci-fi. It's way cooler. And I would just love to see this thing attacked again from a different angle. And Ubisoft will never take that risk.
No.
But no. It would be cool if they did. Well, so we're going to just say right here, we don't know where we picked up or where we left off, but, you know, strange things happened. We've had some technical difficulties. Dan's going to talk about his last game, and then we're going to call it a night. So, Dan, what's the last excellent number two Not So Terrible 2 you got?
I think it's the best example of taking a good idea and making it just amazing. And that is Portal 2. The first Portal was very cool, but it was like this weird thing that you kind of talked about, and you were like, yeah, like I've heard, like, people tell me about this weird Portal game where, like, you do this weird stuff. Like, I don't know. I hear about it, but Portal 2 was fucking everywhere because it was so brilliant. And it was one of those games that you had to try. I mean, you had to play Portal 2. You had to play it for the story. You had to play it for the challenge. You had to play it because you had never played anything like it before, because most people who played Portal 2 hadn't played Portal. If we're being honest, that game, subsequently, after people played Portal 2, they were like, where the fuck is the first one? I need to go back and play that shit. But like that first game was just kind of this weird niche thing. Like, we have talked so much about Portal 2. It is, like, the official game of the Stone Age Gamer podcast, to a point, right? Like, Portal 2, the Tiffany Ryan Portal 2 Memorial Portal 2 Game of the Year Award for Portal 2. Yeah. We really, really like this game. But god damn it if it isn't deserved. It is, for my money, the most well-written game that I've ever played.
Yeah, I would go back to pointing out Portal 2 is one of the best examples of video games as art and as an effective storytelling medium.
There is nothing quite like it. And still to this day, like, nobody has made a game like Portal 2 or like the Portal franchise, where the depth of storytelling and the aspects of the puzzles and the way you have to think to play this game, there is nothing like it.
I agree with most of what you said. I look at Portal 2 as impressive for kind of a different reason, because I think the original Portal is one of the most perfect games ever made. I think the world of the original Portal, and not just as a curiosity, I think that its short length and what it does with the time that it gives itself, it never outstays its welcome. I think it was lightning in a bottle, and it was absolute perfection. Right down to the song at the end. Like, it was amazing. And it was one of those, okay, how do you follow that up? Because that's not an easy thing to do.
No.
Like, you look at that game that was so revered by the people that had played it because it was just so goddamn good. Making a sequel to that was dangerous territory, and they knocked it out of the park. They managed to add all these interesting new elements to it and make it a full-fledged, like, full-length game and not outstay its welcome. It was fascinating from beginning to end, and it's just one of the truest masterpieces in the world. I still tend to lean a little bit more towards the original Portal as the game I like more, just because it's one of those lightning in a bottle situations. It's just perfect. It reminds me of the original Katamari. Like, it's like, you can't follow this up. You just can't. Nothing's ever going to be this again. Nothing's ever going to be this exact magic. But the fact that it was at least as good as the original Portal is amazing. Is a feat of just unfathomable magnitude, how good that game is and how it managed to recapture so much of that completely uncapturable magic of the original Portal. It's an astonishing achievement in game making, and I am angry on a daily basis that if I want to replay that, I got to boot up my 360. Like,
yeah, that sucks.
That needs to be on all modern consoles. I need it on my Switch. I need to be able to play it anytime, anywhere, and Portal 3 needs to happen, and it needs to be on the moon.
It really does. It really, really does.
I need zero gravity portals, and I need them now.
God damn it.
All right, that's going to be it. We're out of time. I'm not going to... Yeah, here's my disappointing sequels. Blaster Master 2, because nothing will ever beat Blaster Master 1. Donkey Kong Land 2, because Donkey Kong Land was freaking cool and original, and Donkey Kong Land 2 was just kind of like this dumbed down version of DKC 2. New Super Mario Brothers 2, because it's a 2D Mario game that bored me so much I never finished it, and that shouldn't be possible.
No.
New Super Mario Brothers 2 is just...
Yep.
Bubsy 2, because how do you make that shit worse? You make Bubsy 2. In every single way, Bubsy 2 is worse than Bubsy 1. And it just think about that sentence, would you? About that sentence. And Knight's Journey of Dreams. They made a sequel to Knight's on the Wii, and it should have been incredible. And instead, it was just garbage. Like, it wasn't garbage. And that's the problem with it. It didn't even get so far as being so interesting as to just be straight up garbage. It was just, meh.
Yeah.
Completely unremarkable in almost every way, except for how blah it was in a lot of places.
Which is not what Knights deserve.
That's not what Knights should be. Like, there is such a great... A sequel to Knights, like the Mega Man 2 of the Knights franchise, needs to happen.
Yeah.
You know? Like, they had this great idea with the first one, but it was just, like, executed well. A real cool sequel to Knights would be something really magical, and... That should have been what this game was, what Journey of Dreams was on Wii, and it just wasn't.
No.
They got the look of it right, but Riala's lips, just, that character's face just glaw, and that stupid talking owl, and oh, God.
Yeah.
They had something.
No good.
And they lost it. They just dropped the ball. There you go. All right. That's our show. Yay, we did it.
Yay! With a minor glitch in the
With a minor glitch. Hopefully you heard us talk about some fun things. And if not, well, we've been at this for a while. So that's our show. Join us next week when we hit up the 10-20-30 for May 2018, featuring games like Dr. Mario Online, the original Gran Turismo, and Space Harrier 3D, just to name a few. Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com. as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris. That's Geekade KRIS. And Dan, where can the good people find you?
At Geekade Dan.
If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks. And
Especially
this week. I really hope you have electricity again. Evan's been out of power since like 5 p.m. and now it's 10. And we'd also like to thank our Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp or his website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh original content. That's all we got, everyone. Thank you for listening. And good night. Keep playing.
Did you forget your sign-off?
I just wanted to come up with something clever. I couldn't do it.